Who would be a wolf spud, eh?
On goes Paul. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Flash in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Network. Joining me to talk about the defeat to Man United, we've got Stu and Jaffo. Stu, you were there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find it? Was it a bit of a slippery situation for you, or
have you put the image in? You can.
I haven't. I didn't think I'd do. I thought it could come across as offensive to parties.
I'll do it myself. So the story goes that we was in Altrincham Wetherspoons, as you are, a 3-hour session in there, nice and standard. But my mum, in her wisdom, saw this two sachets of Lurpak just sitting there on the table from someone who'd sat there before, and it hadn't been cleared away. Fair enough. She then said, she tried to put them in her pocket, saying, no, I'll have these, they're free. And well, they're not free, someone has paid for them beforehand, and they won't throw them away, they'll use them later. But her reasoning was that she wouldn't have to go to the shop then, on the way back to get butter for the breakfast. So I thought, oh, go on then. So she was kind of storing these two little sachets of Lurpak next to her in the pub for 3 hours. Then we left, put it in her pocket. I think nothing of it. I thought, oh, okay, fair enough. Then get in the ground. And this is, by the way, on a couch trip that's, what, 40 minutes from Altrincham to Old Trafford, where she's had plenty of time to put it away in a bag. No, she doesn't do that, does she? Oh, no. She then proceeds to sit on them for the whole journey. And then we get there. I'll go to the bar, as you do. 3 quid at point as well in Old Trafford. Very impressed.
That's good going.
You know, I think it's £4.25 a pie, which was pretty nice as well. Meat and potato up north, you got to do it here. So then she's standing there just before kickoff, and for the audio listeners, this is a 65-year-old woman with a pocket, hands in her pockets. Screen's not going to work, is it? But there we are. And I was looking at her, saying, what are you doing? And she basically lubed herself up and Man United away with Lurpak.
That's your mother, Stuart. For fuck's sake.
Yeah. And it's not my fault, is it? It's not my fault she can't behave herself after 4 points of Worthies. This is what happens. She literally got a bus pass last week, and I said to her, you're going to have senile moments now. And it's literally happened within a week. There's no excuse for it. And that whole taking the piss out of her was the best part of my day until Eurovision. And then fucking Finland got robbed as well. So yeah, it was interesting. Cha-cha-cha.
I mean, it's somewhat better than yesterday's game for your mum. It's hard to describe it. Let's talk about the game. I mean, for me, we didn't want Wolves to feel like they were on the beach, but we sort of are, aren't we, lads? So, unfortunately, the performance wasn't quite there. It did feel very end-of-season vibes. That we finished our exams, but we still have to be in school for one reason or another. But there was only one change to a starting lineup, and it had been, there'd been murmurings for the last couple of weeks, and even, I guess, when he arrived. But Sar was essentially dropped. I mean, Lopetegui's come out and said that he's looking to give players on the fringes a little bit more game time in the last three games of the season. But there was only one change after, I guess, a number of poor performances over the last 6 months from Sar, that'd be fair to say.
Despite being in a defensive unit that's kept 10 clean sheets at home.
So, yeah.
Is that bad?
I am playing devil's advocate. That's all I do here. You know this, Stu.
I think the problem with him, like I said a few weeks ago, that he was so good last year that he was never going to keep that up. It was ridiculous levels. And he's kind of naturally dropped down a bit, and as with everyone else in the squad, they'd just bottomed out, hadn't they? They couldn't get any lower. And with keepers, it's all about form and confidence. And he starts doing stupid fucking things, and which is what I expected him to do when we signed him, because that's the kind of guy, well, like when he was riding that bike around Tetnal within months of coming here. You can see what kind of bloke he is. But you take that with a keeper like that. So for me, that was fine. The odd cock-up, not a problem for the amount of things that he'll save you in the long run. But when it had started getting the other way around, where he was becoming more and more, not a liability, but his kind of confidence or lack of was spreading to everyone else in defence. So where do you make the change? But then you look at the Villa game and he pulls off a worldie and he doesn't do anything wrong at all. He's perfectly fine. I mean, I'll put the face hand emoji up with Bentley on Twitter, because it's just, I don't like the whole give everyone else a chance thing. It's like, we know how bad the game's going to be then as soon as you start doing that. I mean, nothing, no slight on him. He is what he is. We'll come on to him, his performance anyway. But as soon as you start doing that, you know the season's over and you know that you're not going to try. And I think more of an issue for Man United, really, the fact that they scored by a mistake and hitting us on the break in the 90 plus minutes. And they have got something to play for and we haven't. And they did fuck all. So I don't think the performance overall, yeah, we didn't create anything at all. Other than maybe a snapshot here and there. But saying that, neither did they. Other than what Bentley saved. So,
I mean, to be fair, there's a level of just reverting to tight falls. Because, right, we conceded two yesterday. We conceded quite a few throughout the season, but we've always been dog shit up front. So, you know, we've kind of kept a level of resilience. But Trevor, interested in your thoughts in terms of not putting out a weakened team, but giving players who haven't quite had a chance? Do you think it's good from Lopetegui just to kind of, give them the opportunity to impress? Let's say, we pretty much hit a home run January transfer signings-wise. But Bentley's not had anything due to cup runs and things like that.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, with Bentley, I mean, he knew that he was going to have to come in and sort of oust Sarr. But I think the more concern is with the other players like Jimenez, Podences and such. Because unless they're out of contract in the summer, a la Traore, there is a very good chance that unless Wolves cancel their contract, which very much highly unlikely that they're going to do due to the wages that they're on, that they could still be here next season. So you don't really want to be going into the last game not playing, somebody like Jimenez for like 10 games in a row or something ridiculous. Or, not having him involved in the matchday squad in case he's around for another year, because nobody really knows how players like that will react because they've never been in that situation here before. And it's difficult because he's got to try and keep a happy ship and keep a dressing room that's united. But having players who are going to be on the fringes and not play, it's difficult. It's that man management side of it, and that's where he's got to find that balance. And I think probably this game is probably the best game to actually do it in. Now the 40 points has been met, mathematically everything's safe. He can start messing around with things. And I think Pedence would probably got to start against United if he hadn't done all the bullshit with his family in the previous week. But I think that's more just guessing, really. But yeah, I think it's a good thing to do at this point.
Yeah, I think I was pondering it myself, and my kind of line is give him a chance and give him minutes if you know they're going to be here next season. So actually, I think it's fairly nailed on that we're not going to get rid of Bentley in the summer. Just because we signed him 6 months ago and he is somewhat backup choice goalkeeper. Give him minutes, keep him happy, on board with. I'd have been less keen on us giving minutes for the sake of minutes to, let's say, Adama. Unless it's our farewell and you want to do the sentimental stuff. So Everton's almost, I guess, your game for any sentimentality. Okay, let's go for Matinho. We'll go for Matinho, Stu. But actually, if you want to give players the send off, do it then. If you're looking to give players an opportunity to see how they operate in the team, so let's say João Gomes, I'd be all for if he said, you know what, against Everton, we're not going to play Nunes, we're going to play João Gomes, because I want to give him as much opportunity to impress as possible. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult, as you say, because at the end of the day, they are still all professionals and they all want to play every week. And there's only ever 11 happy footballers at a club, isn't there?
I think that's spot on. And you look at, like you mentioned, you mentioned Pedence and his family and all the putting the tactical camera clips on Instagram, and you couldn't make it any more blatant than you want to fuck off somewhere else. But he was absolutely battered on the way out of the ground. Like, there was no like redeeming features of it. Like, no one's sticking up for him at all. Everyone's just had enough. And I think you look at some of the nonsense and losing the ball in the centre circle again yesterday, and you think, okay, prove yourself then. You've had all this nonsense all week long. Come on the pitch, prove yourself, do something. Don't piss about. Just play properly. And you looked at his performance, you look at how bad Traoré was when he came on, just didn't want to know. Which, where after all the stuff that Lopetegui was saying about they want to keep him, it's a bit baffling, really, when you think, okay, play for a contract. You clearly not had any interest at all in you, which you think, as good as you think you are, up your game, and he did nothing. And there were so many times where, again, shock, horror, Traoré on the pitch and Semedo started getting battered to that side. And like, there was times when the ball was on, Traoré comes on, the ball's not on anymore. And what's he got to do? Turn around and go backwards. And then you have people back on his back again. It's, there's players there that have clearly got, they're way past their best here. They might do something elsewhere. But that's what annoyed me more than anything else. I think the Bentley thing, fine. We know he's going to be here. And yeah, that performance was great. But as soon as you looked at Raul back in, being back on the bench, and you think, oh, for God's sake, why? What is the point? And he did less than Costa when he came on, which, there you go. What's that say about him? Well, it's just a squad full of dead weight. And if they are going to start being, which I don't think he will do, the whole sentimental thing next week, fine, save three subs. If we're magically 2-0 up against Everton with 10 minutes left and bring them on for a swan song or whatever. But we know what's going to happen there anyway. And do you really want your abiding memory of Raul, Moutinho, Traoré to be being booed off against Everton? Not really.
I mean, it says a lot that the two of the three highest earners at Wolves arguably shouldn't be in the matchday squad in Moutinho and Raul.
Yeah, I get what you're saying in terms of, I guess, quality of output these days, and it kills me to say with both of them, particularly Moutinho, because it's almost gone from that sliding scale as that, you know, he's good all season to he's good in spells, that he's good for a 90-minute one-off performance to he gives you a good 60 minutes, he's great to bring off the bench for experience, and like that time, optimal time you have Moutinho in a team, it's just ever shrinking ever so much. Yeah, it always goes in a game. And,
it's not worth six figures now, is it?
No, and yeah, you know, big thanks to everyone tuning in live. And you know, Paul said, you know, respect for competition of relegation battle and try and beat Everton. And I get it, but at the same time, I think, to be fair, all three of them, well, no, at least Jimenez and Moutinho deserve some sort of recognition. I mean, particularly Moutinho, I think that feels sort of somewhat nailed on. Raul's future's somewhat grey because he's under contract for another 12 months. Would that be right?
Yeah.
So whether they move him on at this point or not, I guess is a question mark, because there is a decent amount of dead wood in this side, isn't there? And there's players that, and that's a polite way of saying it, but you know, you've got players who've got a year left on their contract. So they've got to make a decision to offer new ones, sell, or keep around and let them run out, as well as losing three or four as well as players who aren't performing and, you know, aren't quite cutting it. That's an awful mix for me.
I mean, when I did it in the week, Dan, when I put the little notes screenshotting, and there was 17 players who I'd keep. That's
yeah.
So that space for 8 new bodies in a squad that's finished mid table. I think that kind of says everything after the last 5 years. That it's time. It was time last year. It needed a refresh. We signed one midfielder in the first time in four and a half years or something like that. When Matthias came in, stupid, absolutely stupid.
I think there's a lot of hindrance there with these sort of players. Like, I think having Moutinho sort of it's just to talk about Moots, because I love him. I think he's fantastic. Probably the best player to ever wear a Wolves shirt in the modern era, in the Premier League era, of us playing in that league. But the thing is, having somebody like him in the matchday squad, it hinders Joe Gomez. It hinders Boubacar Traoré when he comes back. You know, the players who are going to be here long term and have careers ahead of them shouldn't be hindered by a 36-year-old. And you say about Raul and showing him respect. Fuck me. That banner that all the fans paid for that went up during COVID to support him after that injury, I think that was enough. I think that showed what people actually cared. I think we don't need to be giving him minutes and giving him appearance bonuses because we give a shit. Well, yeah, that's just more money shitted down the drain.
Yeah, the whole of last season, everyone was behind him. Everyone, everyone knew it was going to take time, and if he ever got back, he got back to what he was. Everyone knew that, and there was not an issue. The issue started when he pissed off, which fine, get away from Dr. Death, but the way he went about it was bad. And what do you expect when you do that kind of thing and then your new manager comes in and he's calling you out straight away and there's no response, which there hasn't been at all.
Yeah, again, but there's a level of captain hindsight with it, that the time to move Raul on was last summer. That he'd had a season of playing again. He'd got a couple of goals, but very clearly wasn't at that level anymore. And with the World Cup coming up, why on earth they didn't say getting that move to the MLS, getting that move back to Mexico, and basically just have a very slow warm up to a World Cup rather than him, you know, say playing for Mexico instead of us and this, that, and the other. It's disappointing. I'll tenuously link it back to the game yesterday, but Dean Marston, a friend of the show, asks, did Jimenez clap the away end, Stu? There seems to be somewhat of a debate around this.
I didn't see him do that. But I was on the very end of the row. I was right by the gangway. So it was a case of I really needed a piss. So I didn't stay and wait for everyone to come over. Even if we'd won 3-2, I was so bursting. It was that £3 a point. You lure me in, it's cause and effect. But no, I there was more, again, the kind of vibe afterwards was the people who were being slagged off was Pedence, Traoré and Raul. And no one seemed to have seen him do it. So I'll go with what the people who were there were talking about afterwards. So I didn't see him do it. But at the same time, I can't say that I saw him walk down the tunnel either.
More on this to come. Let's talk about the game, because we've done a really good job for nearly 20 minutes of not talking about it, to be honest. It never felt like Wolves fully got a foothold in the game and almost set up to frustrate Man United to a degree. But I don't know if that was just because we didn't know how to move the ball going forward much. But let's talk about Dan Bentley, because fantastic display, you know, in terms of some of, you know, the clips that he did. Really, I was gonna say, really impressed with him to sort of come straight in and do the business.
I mean, it wasn't so much like the saves and stuff that you saw on Match Today because a couple of them were brilliant reflex saves. And we got the one there for the audio people that it, where he tipped it over the bar, which wasn't shown. But it was how he... it's hard to describe it. There's just a kind of... There's a way with keepers where you have certain types who will flap and get rid of it as soon as possible. But then you got the other type who will claim absolutely everything. And not in a kind of pulling it to your chest kind of way. Like, proper, like, stereotypical picture of like David Seaman with both his hands up and stuff like that, with comparing his hand size to other people. But that kind of, you look at David Seaman hands, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the proper like safe hands catch, like where he just sticks and not tapping it and dropping it once and then picking it up, like you're properly sticking to him. And it happened quite a few times. And I thought, actually, fair play, because I slagged him off when he came in. I thought, what? Every time I've seen him, that he's not the player that I've seen playing against us over the years. That it was something else yesterday. Just the confidence in him. And I don't know if that's the goalkeeper coaching that we've got here, which it very well might be. But, hello. He was just really... He didn't look like it was making his debut. And yet, obviously, he's not a kid either. Is he 29? Something like that. He's not a kid, so he ain't going to be fazed by you. But to be making his Wolves debut and Premier League debut overall in that stadium, he didn't put a foot wrong. He was great.
Yeah, brilliant. Some of the saves were up there. That was unorthodox. I think a few of the saves, his body position looked weird, but can't knock him at all. Like you say, he claimed everything. He was there. He was brave. He was vocal. He's leading that back line. He was probably more vocal than Jose Soares. And you say it was a confident performance. You know, you say Premier League debut at Old Trafford, a team that, you know, are chasing Champions League football. They're still in pole position to do so. It's not bad. And you can't knock him at all. And to be fair, the two goals, the one hits the post, and the other one, you know, it's a cutback, so it's you can't do anything about it. So yeah. Fair play, hands up to him. He's done really, really well there, and I think it's good to have somebody who now you can say Jose Soares is going to be pushed by that performance, because Bentley showed he's a Premier League goalkeeper yesterday.
His distribution as well. There was a couple of times where when he caught it as he did, and then properly bowled it out to start a counter attack as well, which. Saar did last year, but he hasn't done this year whatsoever. Which you think, well, if Bentley's doing that straight away, it's clearly not a directive to anyone to not do that. So, who knows? But again, even doing that, he did it with confidence, which was amazing to me.
Yeah, the one throw out was brilliant, wasn't it?
Genuinely really impressed by him. And to be fair, he's a keeper with a lot of experience under his belt. So he's in, I guess you could argue, a prime of his career. Whether he's got enough to be a number one goalkeeper, I'm not quite sure. But I think we were somewhat blessed with Saar last season. And it's going to sound bad when I say you can't, you know, put the will over our eyes, because Saar saved us a lot of points last season. But I think that was more to do with how bad everyone else technically was sometimes, and how good he was in form. Whereas I think how Bentley is doing it, we're judging off one game, which, to be fair, we still conceded two. He had no chance at the first one, and the second one, again, last minute, essentially, a one-on-one. But positive signs to come, and I think at least gives Saar a level of competition. It's always difficult with goalkeepers then. I'm all for it.
You know what? Just before we move on, when you say would he be good enough?
Like, there was Bristol City, wasn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's a guy who, again, is just, I presume he played today. He kept a clean sheet at the Emirates. And Jason Steele, who out of absolutely nowhere has looked like one of the best keepers in the Premier League. And I just had to check how old he actually is. And he's 32. And you look at his career, Middlesbrough, 131 appearances, most of them in the Championship. Northampton, Blackburn, Sunderland, And he's been at Brighton since 2018. 12 appearances.
He's been at Brighton for 5 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, just
the whole time they've been in the Premier League, yeah.
Yeah, just as a number 10.
That almost hurts my head.
So, but he's been given the chance, and he's took it. So,
yeah,
there's no saying that it can't happen. We've mm-hmm. seen it before with keepers who come up through, mostly being promoted with teams, and they just take to it straight away. So, there's no ruling it out. And that performance yesterday was not a guy who seemed shy in any way.
Well, you've got to look at players like Emi Martinez, haven't you? Where they get regular game time. Because he came down to Molineux, he played a few games, but in front of him was probably one of the worst back fours that we'd had at the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, goalkeepers always get a bad rep, because if you can see goals, they always look to the goalkeepers. They don't say, oh, what have the defence in the midfield done to fuck that up? Goalkeepers will always get a bad rep for a shit defence. And you know, that's why you see these ones come up and do well. That's why Steele's done well with Brighton. Because you watch a lot of games. You even watched the Notts County playoff final yesterday. And the goalkeeper, he didn't do anything wrong for a lot of the goals. There were deflections or there were just mistakes by players. Even down at that level, they could play probably a couple of levels above, but nobody gives chances to them because of stats and stuff like that. When you just go and look at a goalkeeper, you can see if he's good. Mm-hmm. Just watch him play.
No, I think it's going to be really interesting one over summer, because, again, it feels like we are in that transition at Wolves yet again, and they might look at the situation going, you know what, we can recoup what we paid for Sarr.
No.
And go, you know.
You wouldn't. I still think that there's a... Sarr, with confidence, is miles better than what Bentley could ever be. But it's getting that confidence back is the problem.
I was going to say, and that's such a hard thing for a goalkeeper. And your Jason Steele's a perfect example. Because the last club he was at before Brighton, Sunderland, when they got relegated. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you could argue he almost needed quite literally half a decade to kind of find his way back. Sometimes it's, you know, we could probably do a whole podcast, and we're doing a really good job not talking about the game as well. talking about the psychology of goalkeepers, and you say having that confidence and that self-belief and that aura. Look at Joe Hart. Like, he was out in the footballing wilderness, wasn't he? And, you know, now doing a really great job up in the Farmers League up north. But anyway, game. Player who doesn't usually make character mistakes like this, but Kilman for the first goal.
I don't know what he was thinking of. He hasn't done that. I can't think of him ever doing that before. Where he's for some reason stepped out like a kind of... Well, they're using the reference in the full Monty, the Tony Adams step up to catch him offside, but he's gone too far with it, and I've got no idea what he was thinking of. He was never winning that ball whatsoever. I mean, the pass was great anyway, but still, for the one before when he slipped, the pass for that was terrible. But again, his positioning for that was bad. So you think, okay, he's got away with one there. And then the one where he just thinks he's a central midfielder nowhere. Well, what are you going to do? You're just completely screwed over then, because Totti's exposed on his own coming across. And it was game over straight away. And you just, one of them things, ain't you? You just hold your hands up. It was a mistake. And they capitalised on it.
Yeah, I mean, he looked a lot more sure second half and things like that. And you say it's just bizarre for me, because... Mm. Out of kind of a lot of our defensive players we've had, he's never been that one to just try and, you know, break line and, you know, try and nick it on the halfway line. But yeah, again, just sloppy from a player who doesn't tend to do, who's a risk averse, I'd say, Max Kilman.
I think it's difficult to say, because like before Dawson came in, he was probably in his worst run of form when it was him and Collins for that sort of like pre-World Cup spell. And what he did yesterday shows me that he's got confidence in himself to go and, you know, attempt to try and win that ball. Yeah. So I don't want to, I wouldn't want him to sort of knock that out of him and knock his confidence back again. But I think it's just now that, okay, he learns from, because he doesn't come in a crucial point, because he doesn't, we don't need the points in that game, but it's now how they tailor that as a learning experience. So how Dawson can help him pull through and say, okay, we need to be concentrating for the 90 minutes, because you know he's still, I don't think he's 25 yet. So he's still like learning, because he's not played a huge amount of first team football in his career. So he's still got to adapt and learn and make mistakes. And I think people shouldn't, you know, people say, okay, yeah, it's a mistake, but people shouldn't like get on top of it. That's what I'm saying. Mm. These people don't worry too much about it. It's now watch him next week, how he adapts. So if there's a similar situation where an Everton player has got the ball and got a turn with it and go, that he doesn't do it again, so he doesn't step in again. And that's how he's going to progress and become a better player now. And that's his learning point and his how he adapts.
Well, I get that. That was sort of one of my touch points on it in terms of, I guess, who you do it against as well, because I think he probably gets away with it if he does it against Everton. A, because I think he might win the ball in the first instance. And B, you don't get punished for mistake in the second. And, all right, Man United get a bad rap, but they're a top four team and are on the improvement side of things for me. They are a team who are getting better from the last 6 months, the last 12 months. And, you know, I've seen Man United fuck up those situations. And they had a couple of chances before in the first half, you know, particularly Anthony with the header where he, you know, just where he headed it over. But for them to actually have the clarity of mind, then, you know, actually just work it through very quickly, very efficiently, to then lay it off for an open goal. That's a sign of half decent side for me. Whereas I think you say, if he does it against Everton or whoever, I don't think we get punished in the same way. But also, I think he responded really well second half. And I think they did have that bit of a rally second half.
Yeah, they did. But it was just so fruitless. And I think a lot of it was down to Hwang again, to be fair to him. He's come back a different player this time around from his latest injury. He looks fired up. And like he looks... He doesn't physically look like he's bulked up like what happened with Neto over that one summer. But it's almost like a mentality shift with him. Like, he's not going to get bullied off the ball anymore, and he's gonna do as much as he can, and he's going to be slightly more physical. I think you saw it, like, they did allude to it on match today, didn't they? That he thought about diving and just carried on when he was through on goal. You think, well, fair play to you. A lot of players, like 90% of players these days, would go down there and get caught out and look stupid later on. But he didn't. And I think him being so direct did help things later on, because no one else is going to do it.
I was going to say, with Hank, he's definitely someone I can see staying around next season as a squad man.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess... I say, apart from a lot of huffing and puffing, and it did feel like there was a lot of huffing and puffing, was there any real other standouts for you guys? I mean, for me, it very much felt, I mean, you look at the XG as much as anything else, and Man United's 2.9 to our 0.41. And that 0.41 very much felt like an accumulation. Unfortunately, but again, it felt like we kind of just stayed in it for like a weirdly long amount of time through saves, decent defending. Obviously, there was a couple of like bizarre hiccups, like Neves and that pass to just no one. And
I don't know what was up with him yesterday, he just didn't seem to have his head in the game.
No,
at all. I just it, it's the same Ruben who's been turning up random points during the season and just in him not being in control of the way he plays and not playing to his standard, because we all as fans hold Ruben in a high regard and high standard because he set himself those levels. So to see him drop as badly as he did yesterday was frustrating more than anything.
And that's happened time and time again, as well. When him in particular has had a bad game, we've all pretty much always lost.
Yeah.
Because the way things are, and I think he kind of, the narrative, I've very heavily contributed to as well, that when we're a better side without him in it overall, yesterday was absolutely that. Because there was no movement at all anywhere on the pitch. And he was demanding the ball as much as he usually does. But when his distribution's as bad as it was yesterday, you're kind of hiding to nothing because you've got nothing. You got nothing at all. You can punt the ball long, but long he's getting to the halfway line and then there's nothing there. And then you're going back, you're horseshoeing again. And yeah, it was, when he has a bad game, everyone else suffers. And I think that whole situation with him, I presume we'll come on to it later as well. It's going to be very interesting there, because when you look at things like that, you think, yeah, he could have had no qualms about being took off at half time, because he was poor. And we needed something else, and we didn't get it.
No, we didn't. As I say, before we kind of talk about, yes, Lopetegui's little bit after the game, that second goal did come in the end. And again, I don't know what it is about the Man U player who scored Garancha. I just find him so... Yeah, you heard me. You heard me.
Say it again.
No, because I'm scared. But I find him so thoroughly dislikable, I don't quite know why.
I was going to say it's the other way around. I've got no issue with him. Although he might have silly hair and whatever, but...
Is it the hair? I don't know.
Anthony. If it was pink, though, you'd have a big issue. Rapping out of style.
I feel it's that he's someone who looks like he's always about to get a booking for a late challenge on a wise fullback.
He's got a bit about him. I don't know. I appreciate him. Anthony can fuck off into the sun. If there's one player who in this season or in opposition that's not at Villa or Arsenal, it's him. It might be an irrational thing. He's just got one of them faces that you just want to hit over and over again.
Yeah.
Just detest
him. Yeah, I mean, Bruno Fernandes is that for me, so... Yeah. At the United team, I just... Yeah. Would players act above their station and have no humility? Just, it's like, you can go fuck yourself. And that's Anthony in a nutshell, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the price tag alone was bonkers. The attitude, the arrogance, and my thing, you can get away with the arrogance if you back it up, of which I don't think he's backed up 90 odd million.
Not a silly little spin.
Yeah. So it's good. In a way, though, it feels quite nostalgic that Man United have players who I have an irrational dislike to. It does
feels make like me... we're coming back to normal, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does feel like, you know, we're coming back full circle on ourselves. But before we wrap up the menu, any other tidbits from the game or?
No. I just saw something interesting. I don't know whether we've spoken about it at any point, but I just seen that there's an interview with a certain young Fabio Silva. Where he said that he hasn't spoken to Lopetegui since he's come in. He says that he feels it's important for having somewhere where he can play a lot of minutes, but he would like to play in La Liga, and that's his dream. So I think, watch this space, he'll probably be playing for a top 8 side in La Liga next season. And that'll be my bet.
Yeah,
Valencia, maybe.
He was never coming back here. Never in a million years. As soon as he started running his mouth off, you knew that the no dickheads policy very much applies all over the club. And look what happened with Guedes. No surprise. take the 20 million hit on him, you're going to take a 35 million hit on Fabio and get, well, not that much. Well, you'd probably get about 10, 15 with add-ons, I suppose, for someone to take him off our hands. He ain't got a future here. Not one at all.
No, but there needs to be a huge turnaround, doesn't there?
Well, the
optics, as it were, for me.
The more he talks, and the more, I mean, there's a certain section of, say, the more mature part of the fan base who hate him anyway, who are never going to get behind him. And the more he comes out with his shit in public, he's going to get the younger ones on his back as well. So at his age, you think, yeah, you might be still young, mate, but you're experienced now. And you know what happens with this. And he just looks like he's just pushing for a move away. Which, again, you can't really blame him for how he was treated here before, which is fine for him, but he ain't got a future here. Not a chance.
No, I think especially, I don't know how much I kind of read into, oh, Lopetegui's not talked to me, because...
Why would he?
He's literally kind of... I don't even think he came back to England when he switched loan spells. I think he just literally just went on the road, to be honest. So his future, I think it's a tricky one for me. You're right. If a Seville come in for him, you know, if they have a bit of a rebuild in the summer after their topsy-turvy season or wherever... who knows? I'd love to see it work out, because there was such a hoo-ha when he signed. But
hey, at least Gully's just got to see him make an assist for Xavi Simons.
His I was
going to
say, great goal. You see, I mean, the assist was pretty simple. The goal wasn't. I'm pretty sure Gladden scored today as well, if I read correctly. Which is just simply wonderful. We should be trying to sign him. Saying it now. I'm saying it now. Lopetegui post-match said, "Today we have tried. I don't have anything to say about the attitude of players. We played against a very good team who have different aims than us," which kind of screams to what we're saying. It's like, you know, yeah, Man United is still pushing for top four, top three, and our lads are still a bit on the beach, aren't they? Which is frustrating, because, you know, we're going to come up to season ticket renewals and people are still going to be on the fence with it. And I think a lot of people got their renewal letters this week. And without kind of going through all the figures, because I will get them wrong and it will be really boring content for you all. I've stuck it up on screen for anyone listening on the on YouTube. Check over on Twitter and also the YouTube page if you're listening to this. But essentially, I think ticket prices have roughly gone up by around between 3% and 9%, depending on where you're sitting. Is that about right, Stu?
It's about 35 quid.
Yeah, it works out about 35 quid. Yeah. So, I think, yeah, a few extra quid a game.
There was the whole the usual meltdown rather, and I don't know what people expect anymore. They haven't. You just put that graphic up every year. It's gone up. Why all of a sudden would they not put it up if they could? And which is the problem, because they can, and they know full well that they can. And while we've got a waiting list, which amazingly we still have apparently, there's always customers, as we are now, waiting in the wings. Not in the Billy Wright wings either, just generally. But it could have been a lot worse. And like for me, 722 quid, 38 quid a game, Premier League football. I don't really care, you know, to be honest. It's less than 40 quid a game, which is kind of across the board now. You go and look, another whole thing of, yeah, you look at the price of gigs and all that kind of stuff, and it's astronomical at this point how much these things are. You know, cinema, it's what, 20 quid for a pass for a month. Watch as much as you want. Yeah, fine. Brits football, you ain't got a choice. You ain't going to go and watch them lot down the road, as all them bellends keep saying on Twitter. And yeah, you can moan and whinge about it all you want, but it ain't going to make any difference. You're just going to wind yourself up. And you can say, yeah, okay, it's not as bad as we thought. I thought it was going to be 800 quid this year. Next year, it probably will be. But that's an extra night out now. The look on the bright side. Obviously, we all, like, my interview with Dan on the trust, and they were campaigning to get a price freeze. They've just ignored it, and then just gone ahead and just carried on as usual. So it's one of them things. It's an extra quid a week. Everything's gone up anyway. They were always going to do this. Fair play to clubs who don't. Brits Fosun. They're not going to change, are they? So we can moan and whinge all we like. We can campaign all we like or whatever. It's going to make no difference. So just consume your energy. If you don't want to go, don't go. Simple as that. If you do want to go and you think, okay, yeah, it's not a bad deal, which when you compare 722 to 500 quid literally 5 years ago, it's clearly a bad deal. But they've got a monopoly.
And also quite a few things that I guess have happened in the last 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's for me, it's not that bad. It's annoying, yes. Am I going to praise them? No. But at the same time, it's better than I thought. So from that point of view, I was pretty pleased. But the fact that you are pretty pleased with paying 36 quid more and effectively, what, 20 quid a week for 9 months for something that generally pisses you off every week. It is what it is. Make your own choice. But whinging about it, are you going to get anywhere? And you're just going to wind yourself up and end up like Russ. Love you, Russ.
I was going to say, I did see a shout on Twitter, and I'm sort of on your camp in this, Stu, that you know what? If you want to vote with your feet, vote with your feet. And it is gut-wrenching to be priced out of going to football matches. But I'd be fascinated to see how many people that's happened to, because it's happened to me.
Well, it nearly happened to me last year. This time last year, mm-hmm. I came on here and said the same thing.
Yeah.
And then they changed it to 9 months, and it was sound. Which again, they don't get enough praise for doing that because not a lot of clubs do it. Which is fair enough. And I think it was 93% renewal last year.
Yeah, I mean unfortunately, the club can not quite charge whatever they want because they've got they've got a monopoly on it. But it's still incredibly frustrating considering how much, you know, we are going through this cost of living crisis and X, Y, and Z. And for a club, it's, I think it works out as probably about $500,000, something like that. I think give or take, it's about 400,000 to 500,000 of increased revenue into a club by increasing the cost of tickets by, you know, 38 by 2 quid a game. And you can't go, well, what does that signify for the club? And people say, you know, well, it pays, you know, it'll pay Neves' wages for 4 weeks.
It's about 800 grand.
800 grand, apologies.
About.
But let's be honest, like, it's not a huge amount. But for club could argue, well, hang on, it pays for, you know, actually 800 grand pays for pretty much, you know, pays for the entire media department, or it pays for such and such, or it pays for, you know, subsidising parts of the Wolves women or the youth academy or this or this or this. And it's always tricky unless they sort of say, you know, we're having a price freeze, and, you know, it almost comes back to the age-old question as well. How much do you think it's worth? We talked on the show last week about, you know, ticket sharing and things like that. And ultimately, that's something that does drive up ticket prices because they know that there's a market for people to spend more on them for these one-off games as well. And it's all frustrating. I did hear an amazing shout on Twitter, which was, it'd be great to sit if a local business came in and offered the club the exact amount that ticket price increase gains them, not to put the ticket price up. It would be the best bit of marketing you would see. And gobsmacked at how that would work. Just not for marketing, just, you know, we've paid it.
Yeah, your ticket increase in association with Topps Tiles or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much. So we'll see, I guess. But I mean, let's be honest, it ain't going to affect renewals, is it?
No, of course
it won't. No, not
well, no, sorry, no, it won't affect renewals. It won't overall ticket sales. Sorry, before people get on my backs. But, you know, if I don't know, it's a really tough one because everyone likes, you like watching your team play, and it's like everyone's probably got that pinch point. And Stuart, as you said last season, they tried to make it a bit more flexible for people as well. So, yeah, it ain't going to change anytime soon. We're not going to say it's going to go back to, you know, the prices that it was 5 years ago. I mean, you know, back in 2018-19, you could get a season ticket on renewal for less than 500 quid, less than 450 quid in the South Bank. It's so. Yeah, 20 odd quid for a game.
And well, you just wait for the new FFP stuff to come in next season as well, and you wait and see how much the prices are going to go up then, when things are based on your income and not just broadcast rights and all that stuff. Then people will have a shock. That could be potentially horrendous. But we'll see if it happens first.
I think there's sort of this. And nobody really has mentioned it. I'm looking from a different point of view, that we've suffered because we've had in our recent history so many years of mediocrity, and people who own the club who haven't want to put money in. Like, I know Morgan built this one stand. He built one stand, but it's like the points where we should have built the ground and improved it, and the stable stand should have been changed. That's when the ground could have grown, and now we're in this sort of boom period. Although the football in the last couple of years hasn't been as good as it has been, this is the period where we could have got more fans in, and price freezes would have been easier because we're in a shit position. We haven't got a ground as big as Leicester and Villa and people like that, who they can do it because they've got more physically, more bums on seats. And because we're a smaller club, in terms of ground size and you know, facilities that we've got, we can't. So it's like it's a shitty catch 22 situation where they need to rebuild the ground, but they can't do it because of what you're saying is coming in next season with FFP.
Which is, I kind of think now is the time to do it because of that reason, because then you are constrained by forever. Because you are then saying, okay, you do then choose, are you going to invest in the team or are you going to invest in the stadium? You don't get it wiped. For people who don't know, just be for the normal people, not the nerds like us. At the minute, any kind of ground redevelopment, academy, women, all that stuff is just wiped off for FFP purposes. It doesn't count towards anything. So Everton can go and wank up 800 million at the wall, technically be in debt, but it doesn't matter because it's infrastructure. That doesn't count to anything. With this new UEFA bollocks, it will. So you either build your stadium now or you're screwed forever, which is why they got the Bernabeu being redeveloped. You got New Camp next year. They're all doing it now before everyone gets hit. And what a shock. It keeps things level and keeps people in their little lanes where they want them to be. Is it a surprise? No, but that's what's going to happen. And this stuff, like Villa are pushing for it now with the North Stand there, which that plate thing needs knocking down how bad it is. But they're doing it now before the changes come in. And if we're not doing it soon, we're never going to get it done for that reason.
Time will tell. This is where Jeff, she's been holding out on us. No, I tell her. Last couple of things before we go. Neo Dicko's birthday, as it were. And it just made me think of what a friend of the fancast, I think we can say, who's been on before. But what a fun player he was when he was fit for us.
Yeah. The three of them for that 6 months was incredible. We've never had anything like it.
What was that? So at the two moments that I can think of that in my head, Stu, the hat trick against Rotherham, or the incident, I shall call it, against Warsaw. Which one's your favourite?
Warsaw, because it was just so hilarious. not just because you got the member of the National Front confronting him on the pitch. And the complete meltdown in the stadium, but more the case of Lindsay phoning up WM and calling all our black players racist afterwards, which was just... And it's on you. Go and type in Warsaw. I think it's Warsaw Ambulance or something like that.
Yeah.
It's still there on YouTube. It's amazing. If you've never listened to that clip, just superb.
It is amazing. It is amazing. I think she sort of she asked for police to press charges against the teammate. But I think... apparently flicking the V's at children. Simply wonderful. He got an injury at such a bad time because we'd lost Sacco. We had a real opportunity with him and Afobe up front to kind of play a slightly different system, and then it just crippled him for that year. And we never really recovered and then go through... going into end of jacket rain, into the whole sort of madness of that first season under Fosun, and he never seemed to quite find his way after that point. But genuinely, I think he's still a player who's still fond of a lot of Wolves players, Wolves fans' hearts even. Right, before we wrap up the show, two things. So we are fastly approaching this charity football match, guys. It is, if you are living under a rock, it's on Friday, 2nd of June. We're raising money for Mind Mental Health Charity. Links in the description below. If you are free and able to donate, we'd love any contributions. We're playing against other content creators across the country for this. So it should be a really great day, really good opportunity to raise funds for a really fantastic cause. Now, my question, I thought I'd end it on end the show on one for you guys. Now, we talked about this beforehand. Being fancast spotted, because right, we've got a nice little production here. We get a few listeners, really proud of our little fancast family. Stu, fancast spotted.
A few weeks ago, when I took my son for his swimming lesson, I was in the toilet, but I was just waiting. He just went in, and I was just waiting outside for him. And the janitor guy was there, and he just kept looking at me. And I thought, well, I am standing around in the toilet waiting for a young boy to come out, which was a bit questionable. And I went, "You're right, mate." And he went, "Yeah, I'm just waiting for my son. He'll be out in a minute." He went, "No, I know you from somewhere." I went, "No, yeah, I don't think so." And I had this on, this training top on as well, so I was kind of on brand. And he went, no, I've seen your face before. I know it. I know you. And he said, what have you done? You've been on something. I went, well, on a few YouTube videos and stuff. He went, yes, you have. You're on that Wolves thing. And I went, yeah, okay. But then he went on to it talking about everyone, and he likes the guy with the beard, which could be fucking any of you. But yeah, it was all very strange. I have had it before when I've been at a bar and someone's heard my voice, and more than facially, obviously, because I kind of blend into every other bald white man in the crowd. But that's more than anything else. It's been voice recognition, and not just from the AI.
That's interesting, because I know Alex Moore used to get spotted a weird amount. Yeah. No disrespect to Alex. And it's not happened to me all too much, but it's happened a number of times recently, which I find kind of fascinating. The first one was admittedly a year ago, and Stu, your service is very on brand, but it was at a Jubilee fete.
Were you wearing a cardigan?
Randy's neck.
I was at a bouncy castle. similar to my daughter's on about to cast, and it was some people who I think daughter's friends, parents, and sort of said, "Oh, congratulations. Hey, how are you gonna be a baby?" I'm like, "Yes." I'm like, "How do you know?" She says, "Oh, well, I think my husband follows you because you talk about football or something." And I tell you, I was beaming with pride, and not just because of a Queen's Jubilee. So anyway, I've now been Fancast spotted twice in 2 weeks. So first time was when we were playing Brighton, and I was at, again, a children's party. I was chatting to one of the other dads there, and he just randomly brought, we were just sort of chatting, and sort of all of a sudden he went, "Oh yeah, yeah, because you do a Fancast, don't you?" It's like, is it Rich? I was like, "Yeah, it is." I was actually wearing a Fancast t-shirt as well. It was great. And so, yeah, we ended up sort of talking about it, like periodically checking our phones to see if Wolves get absolutely spanked, which was a very, very fun, but it was good to meet another Fancastian in Chifnall, there's at least three of us now. So, you know, we clearly, I'm quietly, you know, just knocking down doors and down the high street. Just, you know, any Wolves fans, you know where we are at Wolves Fancast, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know the drill, guys. But the one that's also happened this week. Technically, I didn't speak to this person, but I got a text off our Dan, earlier, saying, "Were you at the Peter Rabbit train thing yesterday?"
Again, very on brand.
I saw it. I was like, "Yeah, in Welsh pool." He went, "My missus recognised you." Literally, I've been saving that because I was like, "I need to tell Stu. Stu needs to know." But the last few times, that I've been spotted with a local village fete, a children's party, and on a steam train. Yeah. Was very good fun. Shout out to Martin, who I think's tuned in fairly late, but he also lives I live near Chifnall. Big up.
There was one other one where my I'm not gonna name him just because he might get all embarrassed about it, but there was I've worked with someone who listens and watches, a fellow follower of our endeavours, and when he realised, because there was obviously she had a picture of me with her kids and stuff, and he was like, "Oh, no way, you married to him." So obviously she told me, and I thought, "Well, what could I possibly do here?" But I thought, no, I want to be nice. So you know when we used to sell them cushions?
Yeah.
I got the Fancast cushion and just kind of put it in front of my face and went, "Hello." And hope you enjoy the show and stuff like that. I did look away and see if we had any stickers left over from what Steve made us and to give to him, but yeah, he was a good egg. We might get him on one of the days if we need a guest. But
definitely,
yes,
definitely.
You know who you are.
I was going to say I will end the show, but I do have a very wholesome one, which I think happened last year. But my mum was having a window replaced in the garage. I have no idea how it came up in conversation, but I got a random text off my mum saying, Do you do a fan cast with someone called Dan? I'm like, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I think the person who's just in my window knows him." What the fuck? And I think they were talking about football, and bless, my mum had been really anxious because we're rambling here, but it meant like she had to move some stuff and it was far too heavy for her to do. I couldn't get to her to do it in time. And she was a bit weird. They were absolute gents. They listened to the show. They're friends with Luke and Dan. And like, mum just chatted to them about Fancast for 10 minutes while they were doing it. I was like, this is just weird. This is just absolutely weird. But that seems a nice point to end the show on. So if you do see any of us out in the wild, do feel free to approach us.
Particularly Jafo, because he ain't had one yet.
Yeah. Honestly, Jafo, I think I did the show for about 6-7 years before it was semi-final of football, and someone turned around and heard my voice.
It's all like, good. I'm not a social person anyway, so I'm not going to bite your head off if you come and talk to me. But like, I think Stu said it perfectly before the show. I am a hermit. So unless I'm coaching or I'm at football, I'm not doing anything.
It's when those people start listening. That's when you'll know you've really got through to them. But that seems a good point to end the show, ladies and gentlemen. We will be back towards the end of the week to preview the Everton game, bring you any news and views coming out of Wolves. As I mentioned, feel free to donate to our charity football match coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Big shouts out to 90 Min Football Network as well. And keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Stu.
Leave your lure pack where it belongs. Goodbye.
Lessons for life. It's goodbye from Defoe.
Harry Fittichi.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time, everyone.